Santa Benny at the Bottom of the Sea by Simon Guerrier. On Christmas morning, the children woke to find that they had grown spikes. Fring discovered it first, yawning, stretching and catching her new spikes on the soft edge of the nest. It didn't hurt. She didn't feel anything other than that her tentacles had caught. That's what made it so unsettling. These hard, sharp needles were now part of her, and yet unfeeling. Numb. Freng touched one spike against the soft, sensitive flesh of her suckers, and it sliced right through. She bled grey blood and wailed in pink and tangerine, her distress curling through the water to wake the others round her. Slowly, gingerly, Stront and Nessa each flexed their forward tentacles, examining the new bristle of barbs.
"Is it metal?"
cast Stront, testing his spikes against the edge of his own nest and easily cutting through the moss.
"A weird sort of metal."
"Bone," replied Freng, her emanations of pink now turning more confident green as she took charge of her siblings. Besides, the spikes made her feel strong.
"It feels like they're just stuck on,"
cast Nessa, scrutinising her spikes carefully.
"Only look! They definitely grow through our skin. Yuck!"
"It should hurt," replied Freng. "When I cut myself it did, but it doesn't hurt where the spikes have grown."
Even so, she carefully untangled herself from the remnants of her nest, fearful of catching them again.
"Why they even give us spikes?"
Stront protested.
"That's dangerous. We could damage something."
"Freng already did,"
cast Nessa.
"And that's why,"
Freng told her.
"Now we can defend ourselves and we can attack."
"Oh yeah,"
cast Stront, twirling round so that his spikes swept through the water at speed.
"I like that. Look at me. I'm dangerous now."
"Oh, watch where you're flexing,"
cast Nessa.
"You'll cut yourself. Or worse, you'll cut me."
"Won't."
"Will."
"Won't."
For emphasis, Stront lashed a forward tentacle in her direction and then quickly pulled it back again before his spikes cut through Nessa's glistening skin. They all stared in horror, taking in what he had almost done, each emanating pink.
"Just don't, okay?"
chided Freng.
"And what do you cast to Nessa?"
"Sorry,"
cast Stront, a wisp of grey showing that he meant it. Once she'd absorbed some of that colour, Nessa moved softly through the water towards him, within easy reach of his spikes, to demonstrate her trust that he would not use them against her, or daring him to try again.
"We'll all have to be careful,"
she cast.
"I can be careful," Stront answered, "and you know I'd never use them on you two."
"We know,"
cast Nessa.
"Anyway,"
she added, clicking her beak to indicate an imminent joke,
"we're both bigger than you."
Stront laughed, his whole body fluttering, though he kept his forward tentacles extended so he didn't damage himself with his own spikes. The other two didn't laugh. Freng glided forward to join Nessa, neither of them clicking their beaks as they loomed over Stront. His receptors glanced from one to the other, while his tendrils tasted the water for any hint of their intention. The girls gave nothing away. They bore down on him expressionless. Scared now, Stront flicked his tentacles to scuttle quickly from them. Nessa whipped out a forward tentacle to grab him, but he dodged just in time.
"Hey," he pinked, "your spikes!"
"We're only teasing,"
cast Nessa. But she emanated no grey. Stront quavered, keeping his distance and flexing his forward tentacles so that the spikes cut through his own trail of orange-red fear.
"Is that display meant to scare us?"
cast Nessa.
"No," replied Stront. "I don't want to fight you."
But the truth was, he longed to do exactly that. He wanted to grapple tentacles and scuffle across the seabed, soft flesh against soft flesh, as they had done every day since developing from polyps. With an awful pang, he realised those languid, intimate days were over and would never come again. Now he would always have to be wary of his sisters,
keeping his distance and changing his behaviour so they never felt threatened or hungry or bored. And then he saw grey in the water, and also orange-red. Nessa had absorbed his sorrowful feelings and had matched his tones. His heart fluttered with desperate hope and joy, and he turned in the water to watch the colours wash towards Freng. As always, two of them could affect the third, and soon Freng was with them, distraught at what they had lost.
"Sorry,"
cast Nessa, lowering her spikes.
"We wouldn't really eat you," Freng told him. "You know that."
"Yeah," replied Stront, but he still kept apart from them. He also noticed that Freng and Nessa kept discreet distance from each other. They had always been inseparable. Now each swam alone. The spikes made them dangerous, but it made them feel less safe. And then there was a ripple in the water. More than a ripple, an electric pulse, which could only mean... The children froze, not moving, not thinking, not leaking colour at all. They hung in the water like corpses, fading to translucence, barely visible even to each other. The pulse came again, stirring the water around them, and their bodies echoed the vibration, mimicking rather than reflecting it back to whatever had cast it. The second pulse was a faster flutter than the first, the wavelengths noticeably shorter. The third pulse had even shorter wavelengths. Whatever cast, the pulses were quickly coming closer.
"But sharks don't hunt this deep," insisted Nessa.
"Shush!"
cast Freng, gazing up into the lighter waters above them for any sign of movement. Nothing. They waited, but still no shadows appeared.
"They must be hungry to come here," pinked Nessa. "They must have eaten all the grown-ups."
"I said shush!"
chided Freng. They waited, watching.
"Mum said she wouldn't let the sharks get us,"
cast Stront.
"What could Mum do to stop a shark?" replied Nessa. "And she isn't responsible anyway. Not now we've got spikes."
"We only got them today," Stront insisted. "She won't let it get us."
"It might not be sharks anyway,"
cast Nessa.
"It might be more of those silvery threads and round things."
"Oh, yes,"
agreed Stront gleefully.
"That's what it will be."
"Cast another word and I'll slice you up myself,"
cast Freng. Horrified, Nessa and Stront both dropped a body length lower in the water, a sign of their subservience. They waited, hanging there, watching and listening, but absorbing nothing from the higher water. No clue about what might be coming. Then, at last, another pulse. And another, the wavelength shorter. And another, the wavelengths so short now they churned the water, producing tiny, hot bubbles of gas.
"This isn't sharks,"
cast Nessa.
"I don't think it can be," wailed Frank. "I don't know what this is."
Another pulse, so fast and hot that they could feel it in their beaks. And then... It didn't come down from the lighter water above them. It didn't swim or glide into view. It was just suddenly in the water with them, huge and red and shimmering, its tentacles thrashing the water without purchase, as if it had never swum before. Yet, with effort, it managed to turn itself round to face the three children. They stared in astonishment.
"Huh?"
cast the creature in a deep boom of colour.
"It's..."
gaped Nessa.
"It can't be,"
agreed Stront.
"She,"
corrected Freng.
"I'm absorbing that she's a she."
"Her,"
cast the female creature, the meaning more accented and exact.
"Her, I mean, crack, hang on, I can do this. Her, ho, ho."
"She's Santa Claus,"
confirmed Freng.
"You've gotta be kidding me," said Bernie Summerfield. "I mean, even more than usual."
"Me?"
replied Irving Braxiatel with typical infuriating smugness.
"Really? Perish the thought. This is a serious business."
He sat contentedly back in his armchair, and a fragment of pancake fell from the ceiling to land in his lap. He brushed it aside, and a whole pancake slapped down on top of his head.
"Flipping heck," said Bernice dryly. "Shrove Tuesday is a very agreeable tradition," Brax told her, peeling the pancake from his skin with enviable cool. "I admit things might have got a little carried away, but the students enjoyed themselves, didn't they?"
Bernice had to concede that the students of the Braxiatel collection had got into the spirit of the pancake races. For reasons known only to Brax, the festivities had mixed up a number of traditions ranging from Christian Lent to the Snee residents' day of cleansed feet, and had been celebrated at the end of November. The result was a lot of running in novelty slippers while frantically flipping pancakes through the different rooms of the mansion house, because it was too cold and wet to be outside. It had been chaos, and all right then, damn it, fun. But she wasn't going to let him change the subject.
"How do we know these enormous jellyfish won't just crush me to death?" she asked.
"They're not jellyfish."
"These enormous sort of jellyfish things.
Bernice, all indications are that the ones on the seabed are merely children.
Enormous sort of jellyfish children that just happen to be lethal.
Well, yes," Brax purred. "The potentially hazardous young of a fascinating species. You might have to be careful."
Bernice scrutinized her employer, but he didn't appear to be joking.
"Me specifically? You're uniquely qualified. For what exactly?"
"I assume, since you've not just come out and said it, that it's something I'm not going to like."
"It will, I admit, be something of a challenge. But you thrive on challenges, and you have experience in communing with psychic populations. So have you, Brax."
"A little, yes. Bernice, this is important. And very regrettably, I don't fit the suit."
Stront and Nessa squealed with purple delight and rushed about in giddy circles. Santa Claus trod water, watching them, her red suit shimmering.
"Ha!" cast Frang. "You're some kind of projection."
"I'm physically present," replied Santa agreeably.
"Otherwise, I couldn't cast meaning into the water around you. But you're right. I'm projecting an image of myself, so I look more like the Santa Claus you expect. But only the brightest children ever notice that. You must be very observant."
Frang blushed yellow, the colour clashing with her pale blue doubt to produce vivid green.
"What's wrong?" Stront asked her. "It's good Santa Claus is here."
"Santa Claus doesn't exist," replied Frang.
"What?"
wailed Stront.
"But she's right here."
"Frang is right," cast Nessa. "We absorbed that, didn't we? Santa Claus is a story for children."
"But we're children," insisted Stront, "so she's for us."
"We're not children if we have spikes," Frang reminded him. "She's probably here to tell us we need to move up to the higher water."
They turned on Santa Claus, bobbing gently before them.
"You are real, aren't you?"
cast Stront.
"Of course I am," said Santa Claus.
"I have to be, don't I?
Because if you don't believe in Santa Claus, you don't get any presents."
For a moment they didn't respond, and then Stront and Nessa were whizzing round in circles.
"Oh, we believe, we believe!"
"And you?"
Santa Claus asked Frang.
"You're here, aren't you?"
cast Frang.
"So you must be real. If you are who you say you are."
"Who else would I be?" laughed Santa Claus, but she didn't cast any grey.
The suit really did not fit Bernice. To even get it on her, Law Cyrical had been forced to cut vertical lines down from the armpits and remove the elastic from the waist. Even then, Bernice could just about climb into the rough, damp fabric, but not do it up.
"Well, you could wear it instead," Bernice suggested as Law wrapped her torso in duct tape.
"Hydrophobic," shuddered Law.
"You're the curator of marine costumes and environments," Bernice reminded her.
"But I never go into the water. Can't even get in a bath."
Again that shudder. pure horror at the very idea of baths. Then she reached the end of the duct tape, just above Bernice's navel, with the suit gaping below. "You're going to leave it like that, are you?" she asked Law. "It's only vaguely suggestive." Law looked quickly through her box of supplies for another roll of tape or anything else that might be useful, and then shrugged.
"You don't need to be watertight, as long as it stays on."
"I'm teleporting down to the seabed," said Bernice.
"Oh, it's a small enough world," said Law. "The temperature and pressure of the internal sea are like being in a swimming pool." "And when were you last in a swimming pool?"
Law shuddered, but didn't say.
"It's not just that I'll get wet," Bernice told her. "I can barely move, and it doesn't offer much protection, given what I'm going to meet down there."
"Have you read up on these creatures?" asked Law.
"Of course," said Bernice. "Every word for the briefing and my own research, what with being a professional."
Why?"
"Then you know the strength of their tentacles, even the young ones."
"You're saying I have nothing to worry about?"
"Well, sort of. These things are strong. Even if we put you in a reinforced sub built for warp level pressure, they could still squeeze you to death if they wanted to.
Go look at the pictures of wreckage from the shuttle that sank there, peeled like a banana. Whew, you wouldn't get me going down there in a million years."
"You could tell Brax that."
"I did. That's why you're the one in the suit."
Law reached round Bernice to work the controls on the suit. She felt the hum of power from the unit pressing the small of her back and the weight of components hanging close to her shoulder blades. It didn't hurt. It was just intensely uncomfortable. She would be wearing it for hours.
"Projector is up and running," said Law, "but the colour trail won't come on until you're in the water. That's matched to the psychic monitor in the helmet, so it feeds off what you're feeling."
"Panic and fury so far," said Bernice.
"Best not," said Law. "You emanate that, and they'll think you're a predator."
"Don't tell me. They're not the running away sort."
"If they don't think you're a threat, they'll just crush you. If they do, one will stay to fight so the others can get away. But whatever image you're projecting, you're not actually much of a threat. As soon as one attacks you, you're dead."
"I see," said Bernice.
"So, emanate friendly vibes."
"We'll have a tank attached to you, giving out neutral vibes anyway," said Law. "These things consume each other's feelings and memory and culture, so you've got to give off a lot the whole time, or you make them hungry."
"Gosh, friendly vibes then. Full hostess mode. Margot Ledbetter of the depths. I can do that, I think."
"Well, yeah," said Law, "but not too friendly, because then you'll attract them like a magnet. They'll grapple with you for sport or social status or as part of conversation."
"Don't tell me. If I just keep my distance..."
"They'll interpret that as unfriendly an attack,"
Law sighed.
"This was all in my monograph."
"Which, of course, I read," said Bernice. "All of it. Every word."
Anything you can recommend?" "Well, if I had to go down there..."
She shuddered again and had to turn away to wipe the sweat from her brow.
"I think you should project an image that they'll not find threatening, but that they'll respect."
"Such as?"
"I don't know," said Law. "And also, don't teleport down now, when they just have their tentacles. Wait until they grow spikes."
"They're less dangerous with spikes?"
"Oh, much worse. But that means they'll be more careful because they can damage themselves and each other. It can still be rough, but the children in a sibling group all grow spikes at the same time, the exact same night. I think it's evolution, so that no individual has an advantage. That way they learn together and there's less chance of them ripping one another apart. Though they sometimes do that too."
"You mean I could do all the 100 things you advise and they'll still kill me anyway?" said Bernice.
"They might do," admitted Law. "But we hope they don't."
Bernice toyed with the end of the tape at her navel. It would be all too easy to unravel it, escape this awkward apparatus and ridiculous assignment. If she had any sense, she would, and right now. She had her son to think of. There were 100 good reasons why she should back out, and no one would think any the less of her.
"When will this particular nursery grow their spikes?" she asked.
"Oh, we can work that out pretty accurately," said Law. "We know the tidal forces exerted by the three moons, and we know the link between that and the creature's developmental hormones. So we can work out the changing levels of their equivalent of testosterone."
She counted on her fingers and then grinned at Bernice.
4 weeks from now, if you think your mission can hold off that long."
"I don't think I've got much choice."
4 weeks from now."
4 weeks and 3 days, so the morning of...
Oh, the 25th of December. You'll be away for Christmas. And you've got a son."
"I'll make it up to him somehow," said Bernice. "But I can work with Christmas."
"Come on, Frang," pleaded Stront. "You have to believe in Santa Claus or you don't get presents. And if you get nothing, how can me and Nessa enjoy ours?"
"I could enjoy mine," cast Nessa.
Frang bobbed in the water uncertainly. Santa Claus smiled kindly at her, emanating green. Frang had never seen a green so undiluted. No hint of any other colour or feeling. It was so unsettling, so fundamentally wrong to produce colour so pure. Or, she had to admit to herself, that disquiet she felt was because of the obvious truth. The purity of the feeling that this creature cast was surely proof that she was all she claimed.
But how could Frang admit that she'd been wrong, especially in front of the other two?
"What sort of presents do we get?"
she cast churlishly. Santa Claus beamed. "That depends."
"Our names go on a list,"
agreed Stront, who had absorbed all the stories.
"It says if we're nice or naughty, and that decides what we get. A toy to play with, maybe, or..."
His eyes dilated. He emanated pink.
"You might get a piece of coal."
"Coal?"
cast Nessa, all pink. Even Frang shivered at the prospect.
"Are we even allowed to have coal?" she wondered.
"That depends," repeated Santa Claus. "The question is, have you been nice?"
The children shifted uneasily, glancing their receptors at one another.
Cast
Frang.
"What does nice involve?"
This seemed to surprise Santa Claus, though the purity of colour made it difficult to interpret the nuances of what she thought and felt. "Well," she cast, "do you ever do things to help someone else?"
"Oh, yes," beamed Stront. "We're always fighting."
"That's good, is it?" asked Santa Claus, laughing.
"It develops strength and dexterity,"
cast Frang in the same tone their mum used to use.
"It builds social bonds."
"It eliminates the weak,"
added Nessa.
"That does seem helpful, doesn't it?" cast Santa Claus, but with tinges of uncertain pale blue. The children coloured too, Stront and Nessa yellowing with disappointment, Frang matching the pale blue with mounting suspicion of Santa Claus.
"But nice is a complicated thing," continued Santa Claus. "You fight each other, and that helps. But then... you have to help each other, don't you? That's how you survive. So in helping your siblings..."
"Oh,"
Frang interrupted.
"You mean we're only helping ourselves?"
She prickled with orange and red, and a slight electrical fizz. The concept, the paradox, excited her neural pathways. The idea was delicious.
"Good girl,"
cast Santa Claus, and Frang swelled with pride.
"Yes, exactly.
So it's difficult to know if that kind of helping is nice.
What about anyone else?"
The children glanced around.
"There isn't anyone else,"
cast Stront.
"You mean we should help you?"
suggested Frang again with a touch of pale blue.
"That's a nice thought, but I don't need help," replied Santa Claus.
"Oh, my days," sighed Stront. "There isn't anyone else, so we can't be nice. Unless you count the pets." They're not really pets,
cast Nessa.
They're just tiny creatures we found and then collected.
Oh,
cast Santa Claus.
But how do you help these pets?
Stront swiped his tentacles downwards, a sign of evasiveness.
We don't eat them,
he cast.
They don't taste very nice,
cast Freng.
Freng!
It's true, Stront, they made us sick.
So now you look after them, cast Santa Claus.
We don't really do anything,
admitted Stront.
They just kind of are.
But we could help them,
suggested Nessa,
if that helping meant we were nice.
Is it nice if we're only doing it to get presents?
Asked Freng. That's a good question, smiled Santa Claus.
Yeah, don't ask questions like that,
protested Stront.
We do help the pets, and we didn't know it meant presents until you told us, and that means we're nice.
I suppose it might, cast Santa Claus. Do the pets recognise that you're helping them?
What colours do they emanate?
The children laughed.
Oh, they're too primitive for feelings,
Nessa explained.
They sort of wriggle and flap around, but they don't communicate.
Nothing at all, cast Santa Claus, surprised. That's disappointing. So you don't know if they're happy being your pets?
They're not conscious like that,
sighed Freng.
They're pretty boring, really.
They are, admitted Stront. So they won't mean we're nice.
I suppose, ventured Santa Claus, though her rich colour showed she knew she was onto something good, that if these tiny creatures don't do very much, they don't require much helping. And that would mean that even if you help them only a very little bit, it would probably still count.
It took a moment for the colour to catch on among the others.
Stront was the first to emanate the same warm blue.
We look after them as much as we can,
he told Santa Claus, though it was partly tinged as a question seeking her approval.
And that means we're nice.
How do you look after them? Asked Santa Claus. What do you actually do?
We give them things they like,
cast Stront brightly. Such as?
Well, the things we found in the seabed that we thought they might like.
And what things were those? Stront flapped his tentacles in frustration.
I don't know the emotions to explain what they are. Can we show you?
Santa Claus emanated more blue. I'm not sure what that will convince me of if you can't explain it. But all right. Let me see what these things are. With a nimble flick of their tentacles, the children swept through the water and then had to stop and wait for the old, awkward Santa Claus to catch them up.
Ho, 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 huffed Santa Claus, enjoying her own embarrassment.
She seemed, thought Freng, to find everything amusing. And that merriment was infectious. Freng could see how the emanations of colour affected Nessa and Stront. The children arrived at the twisted, branching outcrop of rocks, laughing, twirling, dancing round. Freng tried to resist.
It's a sea termite's nest,
cast Nessa to Santa Claus.
They make these tall, weird structures.
I don't see any sea termites, replied Santa Claus, peering carefully.
We ate them,
cast Nessa.
They're nutritious.
And sweet,
enthused Stront.
But have really short memories,
added Freng. You don't learn from termites.
Santa Claus continued to study the peculiar shapes of the rock. Then her attention was caught by a slender line of silver, trailing from one part of the rock and out into the water.
That's one of the things,
explained Stront.
They're not easy to spot.
It was easier to start with because there was a lot more of it,
added Nessa.
But then we gave it to the pets,
agreed Stront.
And what did they do with it?
Asked Santa Claus. The children glanced at one another.
They liked it,
cast Stront, but without conviction. Santa Claus reached out a tentacle to the shimmering, silvery thread. It was, Freng knew, slightly furry, with slender hairs of the same glistening substance.
"Do your pets eat this stuff?" asked Santa Claus. "Whatever it is, it could choke a small creature."
The children bristled.
"I don't think they did,"
cast Stront.
"We don't know,"
admitted Nessa.
"I think," Santa Claus told them kindly, "I might need to look at these pets."
The children didn't like it, but they guided Santa Claus round to the irregular hole at the base of the outcrop of rocks. Santa Claus peered into the darkness and couldn't see anything, until something small and bright suddenly moved.
"Oh,"
cast Santa Claus, darting backwards and almost impacting with Nessa's spikes.
"Careful,"
wailed Nessa.
"I could have sliced you, and then I wouldn't get presents."
"It was my fault,"
cast Santa Claus with apologetic grey. She returned to the hole and looked in more carefully.
"They are small, aren't they? And they move so strangely."
"Their bodies are weird," agreed Stront. "They have two heads."
"One inside the other," nodded Freng. "And a sort of flexible carapace for protection. But it's no good to them being flexible because their limbs are rigid."
"It did move very strangely," agreed Santa Claus. "I hardly had time to see. But you've studied them."
"I have,"
cast Freng.
"Stront wanted to cuddle them."
"They burst if you squeeze too hard," admitted Stront.
"And Nessa got frustrated because they couldn't speak,"
cast Freng.
"You can only absorb their memories,"
Nessa sighed.
"And those don't make any sense because they're so primitive. They're boring."
"Oh, no," replied Santa Claus.
"They're fascinating. And you collected them. That's good."
Just as with the laughter, Santa Claus's enthusiasm spread. The children gathered round the hole, trying to spy the tiny creatures hidden in the dark.
"I can't see them," Santa Claus muttered.
"We could take off the plate,"
suggested Stront.
"We'll just have to be ready to catch them if they try and escape."
"I don't know,"
cast Nessa.
"It took us ages to get them all back in last time."
"We've got Santa Claus to help us now,"
Stront suggested.
"Well, yes," replied Santa Claus. "But if the pets don't like to be in there, it might be good if they escaped."
That thought delighted the children. Enthused and laughing, they each reached out a tentacle, taking care as they entwined themselves now that they had spikes. Then they manoeuvred their conjoined limbs into the hole. It took a bit of groping around to find the cool, smooth emotion of the plate. Together, the three of them cast a combination of feelings. Green, a dash of pink, then blue and tangerine, threaded with wavering gold. The plate trembled in sympathy and then came apart. The children detangled their limbs, pleased with how fluent they could be, even with their barbed limbs. But something was wrong. There was a pulse in the water, fast and sharp and colossally strong, an attack right on top of them. Then nothing. No sharks. No attack. Just a slight fizz in the water. No sign of the pets in the hole. And no Santa Claus. Bernice stank of brine and sweat and myriad jellyfish emotions. The feelings were still potent, and she doubled over in hysterics. Bloody hell! Her whole body was pretty much coming apart from the strain she'd put it under, and all she could do was laugh. Then the medical orderlies were on her, in their protective gear, dismantling the suit and dousing her in what smelt like off milk. They injected her with other fluids that brought comfortable numb. The hysterics became spasmodic jerking, the orderlies dodging as she lashed out. Then an injection into the base of her skull, an explosion of pain through her head, and she was herself again.
"Ow,"
she said.
"Did we get them?"
"As soon as the energy barrier came down," nodded the chief medical officer, a short, bullish woman called Sling, teleported the lot of you. Bernice nodded.
Thank you.
How many did we get out?
16. One of those won't survive the night.
Right, said Bernice, the weight of it almost dropping her to the floor.
15 people.
From a shuttle crew of 109.
15 people who wouldn't be alive if you hadn't gone down there. I don't know how you managed it.
I got the Galactic Navy to teleport industrial quantities of tinsel to the bottom of an alien sea, said Bernice.
I got that bit, said Sling. Plus ornaments, baubles, all that plastic holly. You wouldn't believe the logistics in getting it all teleported back up again, so we didn't cause an ecological incident.
Thank you, said Bernice. While it was down there, the jellyfish didn't know what to do with it, but their pets were tiny too, so they gave some of it to them. The pets recognised tinsel and knew it was December, so it got them thinking a lot about Christmas. And then the jellyfish absorbed that, subconsciously. So when I turned up in person...
They already knew who you were, nodded Sling.
They had enough of an impression, said Bernice. The trick was then to bluff it out and survive long enough to get them to take down the barrier.
Without them getting suspicious and killing you.
They would only have killed me by accident, said Bernice. They weren't bad kids. The water was suffused with pink and tangerine. The misery of three children. They couldn't hug or wrestle or entwine themselves, not with their new spikes. So they hung in the water, tentacles extended, almost but not touching.
We could try to be nice,
cast Stront.
We could try hard. Then next time it's Christmas, we'd be nice.
He turned to Frang, always the one with the wisdom. But Frang didn't say anything. Nessa cast a kindly hint of green.
Stront, she told her brother, there won't be another Christmas. Santa Claus has gone.
I know, replied Stront. I was just suggesting.
We don't get anything, snapped Frang. Santa Claus absorbed our feelings and memories and decided we were...
She stopped, because once more there was a pulse in the water. Stront and Nessa immediately faded, but this time Frang didn't hide. Let a shark take her, she thought. It was what she deserved. The idea must have permeated because Stront and Nessa lost their translucence and joined her. They would face the shark together. But it wasn't a shark. The water trembled, the wavelengths short and quick, a fizz of sweet-smelling gas. And then there were objects, dark and small, a great rain of them falling to the seabed. Stront and Nessa held back. Frang reached out a tentacle to one of the strange objects. They were rocks of a substance she didn't recognise.
Does this mean we're nice or naughty?
Asked Stront. Frang brought the rock up to her beak to taste it.
It's coal, she cast to them. Then we were nice, beamed Stront. Told you.
They tucked in. The coal was delicious.